I feel very grateful to be here and very grateful to be asked to share my experience, strength, and hope. I'm sitting here thinking about a million things to say, and I guess I'll just start at the beginning. For me, when I say that, I don't mean the beginning of my life. I mean the very first time I read The Second Step. I was in a detox, and I had just come from a really rough drug-related incident, as I suppose many of us have, and I'd gotten really badly beaten up, and they didn't put me in a meeting for the first 3 days. On the third day, they sent me up to a meeting, and I saw, it was actually a meeting in another fellowship, but I saw the steps on the wall, and I saw the traditions on the wall, and you know, everyone's milling around, and I stood in front of them and read them. I read the first step, and that word unmanageable, you know, might as well have been in the dictionary right with my name right beside it, because I could totally relate to that. And after being in the detox for 3 days, listening to the other addicts in there and comparing out, I had been comparing out the whole time, because I grew up in a pretty nice, you know, middle class neighborhood in Montgomery County, Maryland. And a lot of those addicts I thought were junkies, and I was thinking to myself, I grew up in Potomac, Maryland, I'm nothing like these people. Yet at the same time, at that time I had a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old that I had raised them in public housing the entire time. So I'm comparing out the whole time up until about 10 minutes before we go to this meeting. And when I had had this shouting match, and there was another addict screaming in the detox about something totally different. But we were at opposite ends of this place, and we sounded exactly the same. And I realized that my personality was really a lot like hers. And that was the moment I compared in, and I thought it might be a really good idea if I listened to the counselor and try to attend the meeting, who had already assumed for herself I wasn't going to go, because I had been very closed-minded up to that point. So anyway, I'm walking into this meeting, I see the steps there, I read the first step, I totally related to it. I see the second step, and, you know, there I was standing there, 30 years old, and not having a clue of how to live, having a lot of ideas of how to survive, but not a clue of how to really live. I decided then and there that there was no entity, no power greater than myself or otherwise that could restore me to sanity. That was way too big a job for God or anybody else. All I knew was that I couldn't bear the life I had been living up to that point anymore. It was truly hell, and I just couldn't bear it anymore. So I sat on that first step, and I'm glad I chose to do it that way. And when it said, I'd heard in the detox in those 3 days that you can substitute anything for your higher power. At that point, I decided to make the group my higher power and the treatment center and the counselors in the treatment center my higher powers. And then I went into this meeting, and I was amazed before the meeting was done. I know I'm very fortunate to have had that experience that way, because a lot of people don't come here right away and have a spiritual awakening at their first meeting. I knew that I had found what I needed to help me find my way out of the hell I had been living in. Me and my sons had been living through, you know. So I believed in the group from the beginning, and I just hung on tight. And then when I went back to my treatment, started the next day, the 28-day treatment program, I went back to that and heard all their suggestions, like that I had to get a sponsor, that I had to, you know, try to hang with the winners, whatever that means. I mean, my definition of that now is very different than what it was then. I thought it just meant people with clean time, but you know what, I really believe now that We're all winners here. And so I went from, you know, this really closed place to a place where I was going to take the suggestions. And mostly not because, you know, not because I was like all, fanatical or it's like, wow, you know, NA or whatever, but because I was really terrified of my own thinking, and I was really terrified that if I didn't find another way to live, another way to be, I was not going to survive. And in the treatment, they gave us a lot of statistics, and those are statistics I chose to apply to my life. I knew my odds of getting clean and staying clean were really slim, and my disease had been kicking my ass. And I guess it was one of those situations where I felt like I was dying. And I've heard this saying, and I believe it applies to me: it's only the dying will listen. And dying or not, I was suffering. I was suffering greatly, and I really wanted a better life for myself. At least it was that little piece of self-love that really wanted a better life for herself and her children. That was another thing. I didn't realize in that first year, while I chose to sit on the first step, that little by little I was being restored. And just those initial decisions were the first steps to being restored to sanity, and that I was actually letting a higher power in. But it was going to be a big job, and I wasn't planning on tackling it myself. All I could tell by the time I had 90 days, all I could tell was that my life was so much better just from not using one day at a time. I wasn't really planning on getting a job or being a productive member of society. I wasn't planning any of that. I didn't think I was capable. I just could tell that just without using one day at a time, my life was so much better. By the time I had 90 days, I was getting up early in the morning and going out and gardening in my yard, you know, versus getting up in the morning, rolling over and trying to look for the bomb, you know. It was just, things were better. I was actually hearing the conversations of my children in the back seat while we were riding down the road, which really, really surprised them when they realized that I was listening and I could hear them talking. And I was actually hearing my younger son making fun of my older son, which he is like a really rare situation. And I interjected, and they were both like, whoa, she was actually listening. And it was like, those were the little things, but the most important things, you know, that I was actually waking up and showing up for life. And then by the time I had 90 days, I mean, I was in so much pain when I got here that I spilled my guts. It's never been very hard for me to talk. And I came in here, and I think I cried for the first 3 years straight. But I had to let everybody know where I was and that I needed help. And I'm glad my nature was that way, because by the time I had 90 days, I had a really solid network in place. And which was amazing, because when I had 3 weeks, my phone got shut off. So I had to start my recovery without any way to call people, you know. And it just so happened that my sponsor had 3 years and was living in my community. And I live in public housing, and it was the guidance counselors, resident counselors who had directed me to her. And she was an awesome force. But in that year, I have to say that, she was very God-centered, and I wasn't intending or really looking for that. I came here, and I wasn't looking for God. I believed in God all my life, and I knew that I had been spitting on the gifts that God had given me, and I felt bad about that, but I didn't think a belief in a higher power was what I needed. So that was one of the reasons I chose to make the group my higher power, the group and the counselors. Eventually, it just became the group. And eventually, it became my God and my understanding. But That all didn't happen overnight. I have 9 years, just a little over 9 years, and I don't say that to say, to qualify myself as having any amount of recovery or anything. I say it because I really like to express how long this process has taken. I mean, I came in here, I'm on welfare, I didn't graduate from high school, I got pregnant, then married, I was 19 when I got married, I raised two kids, I left an alcoholic husband, and I got on welfare with two kids, and, had warped ways of surviving. For me, surviving was to have as many social workers as possible working for Adelita, My counselor in treatment, when he realized that I was pulling resources from different directions, and that I hadn't let any of these people talk to each other because I didn't want them to match information. If I could get the same person, two different people, to pay for the same set of books for school, I was going to do it, If I could get gas money from one because, and something else from the other because they knew I wasn't getting one or the other, it was a warped way of being, of trading food stamps for a bag of weed, and, it was just messed up. And at 30 years old, still living like a kid, really, with kids, so I came in here feeling very, very dysfunctional, and, by the time I had a year, I really felt like, I had gotten pretty grounded, and I believed in the first step, and I was starting to feel uncomfortable with the rest of my life. Like maybe I could and should try to do a little more to change my life. I was in school, and when I had 14 months, something happened that made me latch on to the second step and hang on for dear life, and that was the suicide of my brother. I hadn't given the second step much thought, but I knew that there were things that, like, I should eventually try to get off of welfare and try to be a productive member of society and try to be a better mother and all that stuff. So I was starting to tackle those issues. And then I also felt like I was happier than I'd ever been at around a year. And then this horrible thing happened. He committed suicide, and he was suffering from this disease, And it was, he'd gotten a DUI the night before, and it just so happened that the day after I buried him, I attended a convention in Ocean City. We buried him April 7th, and the next day I was here in Ocean City attending a convention called Shelter from the Storm. And I remember it was that weekend that I felt completely insane. I mean, I couldn't even look at myself in the mirror because I would see my brother's face instead of mine. And I knew that he had died as a direct result, because people get depressed when they're using and they get down. And so I came in here, and I remember there was a few minutes left after a speaker meeting, and I got up at the podium and I let you all know where I was at. And that was a really smart move because people were carrying me through the rest of the weekend. And I knew that it was okay for me to feel totally insane at that time, because I did. I didn't have much choice. I was wrecked. And I'd made a conscious decision to just sit on the second step and let myself slowly be restored to sanity. Now, that whole approach is pretty much how it is in my life, has been, and how it is in my life now, And I mean, there's so many things I didn't know how to do when I got here, and I just had to. There were people here with more experience in all kinds of areas, and I chose to, ask people and let people help me. And anything from, like my sponsor, I ended up using her counselor with her children, got into some psychiatric care with me and my children, and actually we went through a treatment program for a year just to try to deal with some of the damage that had been done in their childhood. And here I was, this unemployable person, and I got a degree while I was here. You know, I have a bachelor's degree now. And eventually I went out and worked, and there were people in the field that I work in that had been doing that for a living, the same thing for a living, for years, and they showed me how to get into the field I'm working in. And it has been in every single area of my life. I have just asked, I've asked people how, and it really, with a complete childlike approach, because that's what I was when I got here, was like a child that didn't know how to do anything. And then I can stand here and say that is unbelievable to me, because I feel so incredibly capable today. But I tell you what, I'm still a question asker, and that's just the way it is. I still have to use that approach in every area of my life. I have to ask people how you do things. I stayed in college and on welfare 6 years into my recovery. And the seventh year, I had told this friend of mine in the fellowship that I wanted to move out of that public housing community. By that time, I'd been living there 12 years. And I went straight from that to owning a home, which totally freaked me out, because here I was, this girl that didn't have any living skills, that was dealing with real living situations for the first time, like paying utilities. And that first year was really scary, and I didn't think I was going to survive it. But I found my independence after that first year. I might have been practicing independence during the course of that first year, but at the end of that first year, it wasn't until I was in another convention here. And I was just saying this today, that I felt like I could barely handle my struggle. I was having a very hard year, was barely making it. And I sat here at the convention, and I felt like I didn't hear a word the entire weekend. Like, I attended speaker meeting after speaker meeting, and it wasn't until the Sunday morning meeting, when the speaker used an analogy, and she described us like a lump of clay, and that our higher power was kneading us and stretching us and molding us. And I stole that analogy from that day on, because they were saying how, it's painful when you get stretched and tugged and pulled, but it's only because your higher power is shaping you into being what you're intended to be. And it was in that meeting for the first time that I believed that that's all it was growing pain. And I could actually, if this makes any sense, relax in the pain. It didn't mean the pain went away. It just meant that I trusted the pain. It's amazing how, in every phase of development in my recovery, I have had a plan, It was my plan. And it was always such a smart plan. And I always thought it was the best plan, but my higher power always had another plan. And it wasn't until I was through this plan, the way my higher power wanted it to be, that I could see that that was the smarter way to go the whole time. And it's such an arrogant place to come from, because I would be at the end looking in hindsight saying, oh yeah, you're so much smarter than I am. Your way is better. And that's how it seems to happen over and over again. I mean, there's so many things I've learned, so many things I am capable of today. It's like I have to be so dead set on finding my way through a situation instead of letting it, my higher power's way, lead me through it. And it's that process all over again. But at the end of every ordeal or every situation that I push through, my faith grows greater and greater. And, it took a while, but after being here for a couple of years, I realized after being in a meeting one afternoon that there had to be a greater force behind what we are doing here. And that was my higher power. And our higher power, you know. And that's when I started really having a relationship with the God of my understanding. And it was amazing how it had to be a tangible people in front of me to, I had to talk to the people in front of me, and it went from being that to conversations by myself driving down the road with God, you know? And so I do have a conscious contact today. That's a great source of strength. And even when I know I'm not acting in my faith, it doesn't mean I'm not in my faith. Even when I know or I don't know the right way to go, the right direction to turn in, I have faith that it's all going to generally go in the direction that's best and from my higher power, you know. And I have this son that's having a lot of problems right now. He's very upset. He's had a tough life, you know, growing up with me. And it got a lot better after I got clean, but he has a lot of emotional baggage. And I'm at the happiest point I've ever been in my whole life. And even with the discomfort I feel from what's going on with him, I trust that it's just something that's pushing us, like momentum, towards a solution, you know, that it's part of the grand design. I don't know how much that was about the second step, but all I know is that, you know, from getting this, getting restored from a place where I didn't believe I could be restored, and beyond and above what I ever imagined to be able to do, I know that the horizon is very bright, that the future's bright, you know, and that it just gets better and better. And that's just how my recovery has been. But it hasn't been an overnight process. The other thing I wanted to say is, I wanted to touch on the third step just a little bit. And that was that, my higher power's will for me has been from the beginning something I practiced, but I didn't know I was practicing. And that was coming in here and opening a door and letting this good thing in my life. And the way I continue to practice that is by, even on the days when I want to slam it shut, by keeping my foot in the door just to let it continue to seep into my life. And as long as I keep coming back and keep doing that, my higher power will keep coming into my life. And I'm just glad to really be able to share. I hope that made sense for people, I'm very grateful to be here. I'm very grateful for my story, exactly the way it has turned out, good and bad. And I really would never change any of it if that's what it took for me to get here today. And I have a very good life today, one that is so worth living. And with that, I'll just keep coming back.
Thank you, Adelita. Okay, would you help me welcome our second speaker from the D.C. area, James B.
I'm James, and I'm gonna add.
Hey, James.
Hey, I'm really surprised to be up here on the second step. I had no intentions of doing this when I left D.C. I messed around and was downstairs and was talking to some people down there, and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Why?" And next thing I know, they told me they needed a stand deck, so I guess that's what I'm doing. Let me try to briefly share a little bit about how I got here. I came into Narcotics Anonymous by way of treatment center, and I came into that treatment center by way of a scheme. And my scheme was to get back into my house, because my wife was throwing me out with regularity. And I thought that I should smoke as much PCP as possible, and she thought that if I smoked both, I should live with somebody else. I didn't understand that, but she didn't think I should be around children, our children, if I was going to be high. So my reason for going to treatment was not because I felt like I was tired of being tired, or because, you know, I felt like the drugs had stopped working, or any of those cliches that I've heard. It just was simply because I wanted to get back in the house, nothing else. And because of that, and because I was going to any length to get back in the house, I had heard about a treatment center on, they had a couple of TV commercials where they would come up. And so I called this treatment center, and they required me to go to see a psychiatrist. This psychiatrist told me, he said, James, I think you should stop smoking that PCP for sure. And I suggested you don't drink anymore. So I know that the guy has a problem because I didn't come to see him about all that. I just came to see him because that was what I had to do to get into treatment center. And when I went in there, they treated me like, you know, I was going to hurt myself. They took all my cologne, saying we're going to take this because it's glass and you might break it and slash your wrist. So I told them they didn't understand while I was there. I was there because I was trying to get back in the house. I wasn't trying to kill myself. My wife had thrown me out for like one month. She threw me out five times. Now, and the fifth time she threw me out, I went to my mother's house, and she asked me why I was there. And she said, you can't stay here. I said, why? She said, because you need to go back home with your wife. So I knew that was useless. So that's why I'm in treatment. I'm not here because I'm trying to kill myself. I'm here because my mother won't let me come over there, and my wife is throwing me out all the time. While in treatment, they brought meetings there, and Narcotics Anonymous was one of those meetings. The first one I went to was an extremely small meeting. It had a table about as big as this, and there were people sitting around the table. And the guy had 6 months, and he was leading and chairing the meeting, and the guy was crying like a baby, and his snot was running all down his nose, and, you know, he needed tissue. I mean, I hadn't seen a man cry like that in a long time, you know, looking at TV or something. But when I listened to the guy was crying just because he didn't want to get high no more. Now, I know I must have walked into another planet now, because where I came from, suckers didn't cry because they didn't want to get high no more. You know, I just didn't understand that concept and how you deal with something by crying about it. And if you didn't want to get high, you just stopped. See, I myself did not want to stop getting high. Had no intentions of it. But as I continued to come back to meetings after I was released from that treatment center, I came to meetings because my wife wanted to come with me and spy on me. That's what I thought. I thought she was there to spy on me to make sure I was going into meetings. Today I know she was there because she loved me and she wanted to support me. But back then I thought, man, she needs to stop. You know, I'm all right now. And something happened. You know, I like around 60 days or so, you know, I just didn't want to get high when I got up that day. And I hadn't planned on that happening. And as I continued to come back to meetings, you know, I felt a little better, and I started to sort of understand some of the things that I had went through as far as where my disease had taken me. Now, as part about being restored to sanity, it says most of us pass over this step with a minimum of concern. Well, that was obvious in my case because I didn't think I was crazy. And in order to work the second step, you have to believe that you have had some sort of mental illness, which I didn't. So as I continued to come back and listen to other people's stories and identify in, that's when it sort of hit me. And plus I started to see some people whom I had known while I was using. And some of them I thought were pretty cool, and if they were up in here, well, maybe I did have some problems because I did some of the same things that they had done. And that's what it was that made me able to recognize that I had some problems with my thinker. My sponsor, when I got a sponsor, and he didn't wait until I had a year clean or any of that kind of stuff. He just immediately put me on the first step and had me to read it for 30 days straight. And if I miss a day, start all over. I thought he was crazy. But I did that. And what happened was that it made it a lot easier for me to start looking at James and seeing myself as the problem, because I just happened to be born in the wrong family. My mother was a strict disciplinarian. My father died as a direct result of being too drunk to operate his own car when I was 5 years old, so I got problems with male authority figures. And if anybody who was a male authority figure came across my way and he's telling me what I'm supposed to do, like on a job, I got an attitude. Now, you could send a woman all day and say, James, you know, we need you to go over there and pick that up and do this. Okay. But if you were a man, I couldn't do it. I had to tell you what I thought. And I had a real patient boss that I worked for down at Department of Customs, and he would meet with me, and we would discuss how we were going to talk to one another. And he wanted to let me know that he was going to treat me with respect, and he called me young man. And I said, well, old man, I'm going to treat you with respect, too. You know, so that's how I treated that, because I really, really had a serious problem dealing with men. Because my father died, my mother and my grandmother raised me, so that's really, you know, how I learned how to deal with people was dealing with women. As I continued to grow up, I should have recognized that there were some problems, but I was in too much denial to realize that I had a problem when I came into treatment. So how was I going to recognize it before I even started or thought about treatment? Because my mother knew I was crazy a long time ago. And what she did is that she told me that she loved me because she thought I was going to die when I was around 18. She was pretty sure that I'd be killed. So what she did is that she went and she took out a double indemnity life insurance policy for $250,000. And she came to me and she said, son, I love you, but I think you're going to end up getting killed. And so I went and I took out this double indemnity life insurance policy, and I plan on burying you well. I'm going to get you a nice white casket, a nice $500 suit, some beautiful shoes, and I'm going to grieve at your funeral. But after that funeral, I'm going to spend the hell out of the rest of the money. So, of course, I thought this lady was crazy. Because, you know, who would want me to die? I didn't plan on dying or anything like that, so she wasn't getting paid on that deal. So, but I mean, always little things like that would always let me know that I had a problem. But I was just in too much denial. And I really, really liked getting high. So getting high couldn't possibly be the problem. I had no reason to believe that I was insane until I came into Narcotics Anonymous and started listening to other people's stories. Then I was able to look at James. And today I still have problems looking at James, but I have a lot of people in my life today who don't mind taking my inventory for me. And one of them is my wife, who I'm still married to. She happened to take my inventory for me this morning. And what she told me is that I was a selfish, self-centered guy, and that she's, from time to time, don't know how she stays married to me. And I'm thinking, I don't know how I put up with your ass.
because as bad as you think I am, I'm thinking there's something wrong with you too. So, but what that did and what has happened since I've been in Narcotics Anonymous and have allowed these steps to work in my life is that I had to look at James. And I have recognized that I was from time to time unable to show love to people because I'm still sometimes that little boy who think that if I expose too much of myself, you might say something bad about me or say something to me or go tell somebody what I said or how I feel and go away and laugh, or, you know, make fun of me. So I've used that as an excuse not to get close to people and not to let down all my barriers, even within my marriage and with my children. And that has the potential to end my marriage. And you all told me that I still get a chance to make a decision of how it is I want to live. And I'm choosing today to continue to look at James and try to do something about it. Because I like my wife. You know, most of the time, my wife and I get along pretty good. And those of you all who have spouses probably understand that. But there's some times, man, where, you know, I want to be a bachelor. And I surely don't want no kids. I mean, kids are pretty cool, man, you know, when they go live with somebody else. But my children seem to get on my nerves the most. I guess that's like all parents. And two years ago, my wife and I decided that we were taking four homeless children to go with the four children that we already have. And this caused a major dilemma in a complete self-centered person like myself life. Because now there are, you know, 7, 8 kids in my house. They've taken away all my hiding places. I can no longer go and find my little isolation place down in a little rec room and look at, you know, the games, because now they're living down there. And, you know, and all of a sudden things started to be, they would just start walking out of my cabinets. And so I had to start a new program in my house, you know, and it was that these kids were driving me crazy. They came from real adverse situations. Their mother hadn't paid rent since 97. They came to live with me in 2000. So my thinking tells me if she's not paying rent, she's probably not buying food. Because they were stealing all the food out of the cabinets and refrigerators, and when everybody would go to bed, they would go to work. And today, you know, I understand that they were hungry, and that was some behavior that they had had long time before they came to live with me. Today, I'm very familiar with learned behavior. So what happened was that, in the beginning, I accepted it as that these people, you know, they needed food. But it continued to go on month after month, year after year. I mean, they were there up until a couple months ago. And what happened was it started to wear on me. And I was starting to act crazy as hell in my own house. And I just couldn't continue to take that. So I went to my wife, because the little girl who was 9 was a professional thief. She could steal anything and everything, no matter size or width, she could take it. And she would steal. We went to Nordstrom's and she stole out of Nordstrom's. We went to Hex and she stole out of Hex. And she stole out of Nordstrom's and she came home with a stuffed doll and a couple other little things. And all she had on was sweatpants and a sweatshirt. And we have yet to find out how she got that doll out of Nordstrom's. That's how well her skills are. And what happened was that you know, it just was wearing on me over and over. I mean, I come home and I got to deal with this, and they stealing and taking it. They took my stuff. It's one, and So I went to my wife and I told her, I said, man, we got to do something about this, man, because, Ivor, I'm going to have to leave because the stress was killing me. And so my wife made a decision one Sunday morning to drop them off where we found out where the mother was living, because we had to chase her down because she had stopped communicating with us. And come to find out, she was living less than 1 mile from my house but hadn't called to speak with her children in 6 months. So that was part of the insanity, is when I talked to my sponsor, he told me that I was taking on too much and that it was my ego had taken over, and that was the major reason I was still in this thing. Said, because normal people would have found that mother or call somebody and say, look, you got to take these kids because now they're wrecking my family and it's too much. But I was in there saying, no, well, I could do it. And knowing my feelings, I'm ignoring them because it's telling me, man, you got to do something because it's killing you, man. And it's either them kids leaving, you leaving, because getting high is not an option. But they made me think about using, because I hadn't dealt with that kind of stress before, not since being clean. And when the kids left, I sort of felt kind of bad because I know they were going back to live with that same lady who hadn't paid rent in 4 years. But I felt good for myself and my own family, because in here you all told me that I matter and that I don't have to put myself last to make somebody else happy. And I feel pretty good now. You know, the kids, my kids sort of miss those kids, but they'll get over that. And I think they'll be better off for it, because my daughter, eventually, who's 6, would have started emulating those children, and she would have started picking stuff up out of Nordstrom's too. So, I mean, that's where Narcotics Anonymous comes in and helps me to grow up and take and make some responsible decisions and recognize I can tell somebody how I feel so that they can let me know whether I'm acting insane and I can get some help. And it's still, it's not easy to admit that I've been doing something wrong for so long. But I learned that either admit that or go crazy and use. So my what I've learned a whole lot about James in Narcotics Anonymous, and I've learned that mostly through listening to you people and getting out of my own way. Because as long as I stay in my way, nothing's ever going to change. I've seen a lot of people come and go. One of my home group is at a treatment center, so I get to see a lot of people come and speak extremely well about what they're going to do this time and go back out, and they come back in, and they go back out, and they come back in. And those, I get more help from those people than they recognize, because I never had to do that, and I know it has very little to do with me. It has everything to do with my high power, and I am completely, happy to be a part of Narcotics Anonymous, because if it weren't for Narcotics Anonymous, I truly don't know where I'd be. And I want to thank you all for letting me share.